thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
I was consulting with my team during that tiny little window where I insert something about my big thought. I guess I really don't have one right now. But I do have tickets to see Elton John in concert. How about them apples? I'll be able to say I got them from WGN Radio that year, and boy, was that a good year to get them, because that was it. It's 108 now on WGN. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Kelly Pope is a professor of accounting at DePaul University. She's the host of a new podcast called Nothing But the Truth. She is a forensic accountant, so that if somebody is ripping off the public, you need somebody to come in and look at the books and know exactly what to look for. That's what she does. And as she does that, she finds amazing stories. She tells them in a podcast. Her co-host now is Abby Ellen, who is formerly of the New York Times. And the things they uncover and how they uncover them, positively fascinating. Oops. Positively fascinating, and we will visit with her at 1:35. We'll visit with an editor at the Florida Sun Sentinel in the 2 o'clock hour to talk about the latest on what happened in Florida and how their gun laws work there. And then we'll visit with Shelley Coolwin, who is the attorney for Elena Hampton. She is the young lady who said she was discriminated against in Alderman Quinn's office, and it implicates Mike Madigan, too, for not doing enough soon enough about it. Okay, so what's the case there? We'll get to all of that in just a couple of minutes. And talk to the attorney in the 2 o'clock hour. And he is the guy I mentioned. I didn't know this when we first arranged this interview, but he is the attorney that they just happened to mention in the ink column in the Tribune today. President Trump may have a reputation for demanding loyalty, but his latest nominee is in the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, the Tribune writes. District Judge Amy St. Eve, the one that he's nominating, memorably rebuked the president several times during his testimony in a 2013 trial in Chicago's federal court, sued by an 87-year-old woman, Jacqueline Goldberg, who accused then just the real estate developer of ripping her off over a deal for a Trump Tower condo. Trump repeatedly clashed on the stand with her attorney, a man named Shelley Coolwin. Well, Shelley's the guy coming in to visit with us in the 2 o'clock hour. It all got to be too much for the judge, St. Eve, who brusquely scolded both of them. "You have been dancing around and boxing each other," she chided. "This is not a boxing match. You've got to stop it. Let's get control of ourselves." She said, "Do you think the jury likes this? If you do, I can tell you they do not," the judge said to Donald Trump and Shelley Coolwin, who is evidently willing to spar with a man who punches back, he says, 10 times harder. He'll be in our studio in the 2 o'clock hour, the attorney, not the president. The president today did address the nation. I have four shortcuts to play for you. The first one is just a few seconds of Donald Trump today, particularly as he addressed the school children who might be fearful about going back to their schools after yet another school shooting, this one in Florida.
"Especially those who feel lost, alone, confused, or even scared. I want you to know that you are never alone and you never will be. You have people who care about you, who love you, and who will do anything at all to protect you. If you need help, turn to a teacher, a family member, a local police officer, or a faith leader."
So the president's advice to kids who might be fearful and to the nation is turn to a trusted adult. Turn to a trusted adult, said Donald Trump today. I was thinking of what President Obama said after Newtown. I just have a couple of clips to get to the point that the president then, Obama, was trying to make. This is President Obama after the Newtown shooting.
"This evening, Michelle and I will do what I know every parent in America will do, which is hug our children a little tighter. And we'll tell them that we love them, and we'll remind each other how deeply we love one another. But there are families in Connecticut who cannot do that tonight."
President Obama famously, during that speech, lost his composure once for about 5 or 6 seconds, another time for almost 20 seconds he fought to compose himself.
"The majority of those who died today were children. Beautiful little kids between the ages of 5 and 10 years old.
Then he dabbed at his eyes as the cameras clicked, and he looked at his script with his head down, trying not to cry openly, but the pain on his face was evident. So let's go to cut four, Al. If this is the president, not at that address to the nation, but shortly thereafter, the president was at an event, and he decided that he was going to offer more than just consolation. He had a call to action.
Every time I think about those kids, it gets me mad. All of us need to demand a Congress brave enough to stand up to the gun lobby's lies. We need the wide majority of responsible gun owners who grieve with us every time this happens and feel like your views are not being properly represented to join with us to demand something better.
I was the president, and he said, we've got to change the gun laws in this country. You need to stand up to the gun lobby's lies. There was no such rhetoric from the president today. Of course, Donald Trump wouldn't take that tack, but there was nothing very specific, and Barack Obama very much was after Newtown. He said, we have to change the gun laws in this country. And he called out the NRA for their lies. And some people were critical of Barack Obama because they felt that that was either politicizing the event or not helpful. It was too much too soon. And other people have been critical of the current president for not being specific enough and not saying we need to change the gun laws. We just need to tell the kids to turn to an adult, like that's going to fix it. And I was just wondering what your reaction to those two approaches the last two presidents have taken. One called out the NRA and said, hey, you guys, everybody, we have to do something. And the other one, very much so, at least so far, has not. You know, Donald Trump is his own man. He might yet say, you know what, it's time we looked at gun laws. I could see him doing that. I really could. It's about more than that. It's about mental health. It's about a lot of things. But I don't know how easily you can fix mental health and how you round up the people that act suspiciously. But I do know that with legislation, at least, you could try to do something about gun ownership. So that was what Barack Obama was asking us to do. Donald Trump was doing nothing of the sort. And my question here is more about the timing. That is this the right time or the wrong time for a president to speak that way? Is this the right time or the wrong time? And I'll be honest with you, I do not know the answer to that, because no matter what you say, it's going to be divisive. If you say something, if you say nothing, it's going to be divisive. And it's a time for healing. So I don't know what the right rhetoric is. Barack Obama clearly was speaking from his heart, and Donald Trump was saying what he felt and was omitting things that he did not feel. And I was just wondering what your thought about that was. Do you want to hear the president say specifically what should happen? And what about the contrast of those two messages? Did they call him out or not? Is it too soon or not? My number is 312-981-7200. I'll pause here. We'll take a couple of your texts and calls, and then I want to go on to something else that's happening in Springfield. Blackhawks later tonight. We are proud to say we are the new home of the Chicago White Sox. And if you're not watching or listening to Blackhawks hockey tonight, the Olympics continue with figure skating, snowboarding, skeleton. A lot of people say, John, what's a skeleton? I don't know.
It's the luge face forward, right?
Oh, that's where if you have a crash, you will be turned into a skeleton. We were watching that last night. That looks like something you and I could do and probably die doing it.
I luged once. I was up in northern Wisconsin or upper Michigan, and they had one of the few outdoor natural luge courses.
Seriously.
I mean, I only did it for the last 20 feet, like one turn. My family went up there a long time ago.
Was it really fun?
It was really cool. I mean, I could have never done it on the whole track because it would have been way too dangerous for me. But yeah, it was really cool.
It looks really dangerous. They were doing that last night. Then the downhill slalom stuff and the figure skating. Johnny Weir's hair was there last night. Tara Lipinski. And then the other guy. It's Johnny, Tara, and the other guy. And they coordinated their outfits. They were in Valentine pink last night. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Here's the one mystery I have. And it wasn't maybe an issue at the finals of the pairs last night. And that was fun. And it was good to see the judges get it right. There's a lot of these events you're watching on TV. Ain't hardly anybody in the stands. And I don't understand that. Why are there so many empty seats at these Olympic events on TV? The first couple to go out last night in the pairs was the French couple. She is one of Earth's best specimens. Oh, my God, is she a beautiful woman. In fact, my wife said something like, oh my God, look at her. And I said, really, I hadn't noticed. And then we both laughed. That happened last night at my house. It's 1:22. So in the 1:30 segment this afternoon, we'll talk more about this forensic accounting. It's a fascinating new podcast that we're promoting here at WGN Radio. And the woman behind it has been in our studio before. We'll say hello to Kelly Pope and her colleagues in just a little bit. But I'm asking you right now, we're getting lots of texts and phone calls about the two presidents' approaches after a school shooting. Barack Obama very quickly lifted a call to action. So far, Donald Trump is not. I'm not sure what the right thing to do is. Julie, you go first. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm fine. I'm not including the presidents in here. I'm so tired of hearing, well, now is not the time after Sandy Hook, after South Carolina, after Texas, after Nevada, and now. If not now, when is the time?
Julie, thanks for the call. This texter says, hey, John, this latest shooting was an attack on innocent people. What if FDR made a speech after Pearl Harbor, talked to a parent, talked to a police officer, talked to a faith leader? These continued attacks demand action, John. Let's go to line three, and there is Jerry. You're on WGN. Hey, Jerry.
Hi, John. How you doing?
Good. Talk to me. What do you want to say?
Okay, I'm a Korean Army veteran, and I know what guns are. And I just saw a story on CNN about what the NRA pays to these people in Congress. Like, they pay Marco Rubio $3 million. They pay Bob Portman $3 million. They pay Joni Ernst $3 million. So nothing is ever going to be done in Congress as long as the NRA keeps paying these people millions and millions of dollars to vote against the gun laws.
That's to their campaign finances. Okay, thanks for the phone call on that.
You know, yeah, there was a chart going around the internet recently, so I'll give it 50-50 validity.
Uh-huh.
But it just talked about the number of lives lost, you know, to terrorists or to people falling into a pool. And, you know, but think of how much we spend and how much we inconvenience our lives to fight the unlikely event of a terrorist attack in our backyard or at our airport. You know, how much we invest in that and how many fewer people are killed in terror attacks in this country than in everyday shootings. I mean, it's not even close.
You really do have to almost get creative to get your head around it. Steve, was it you or Eric, somebody, when we were recording the Mincing Rascals podcast? That's a podcast you and I do on Thursdays. It'll go up around 5 this afternoon. But if we've had, say, 18 gun-related incidents at school shootings, some large, some small, if we've had 18, I'll say, gun-related incidents and shootings at American schools in the first 45 school days this year, let's say that that was the average of the population of a Cessna airplane, right? You can get a half a dozen people in there or so. Suppose we'd had 18 fatal Cessna airplane crashes this year. Would we be doing something to change airplane laws or Cessna laws or Cessna rules? Wouldn't we be doing something specifically about it instead of saying our hopes and prayers to people who fly airplanes?
Well, just imagine if we had 18 Muslim random attacks that injured 3 or 4 people around the country in the same time. Well, how upside down we would turn ourselves.
We are paralyzed on this one, though. John, what strikes me, says this texter, is that one response was an emotional response from a man affected and upset by what happened, and one response was from someone reading what he thought was expected. There was no heart in that. This is Jay on line 3. You're on WGN. Jay, we're comparing the responses of the two presidents and not saying one was better, asking you which one do you think we should embrace? What's the right course of action for a president on a day like this? Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, John. So all this is about the NRA and the right to bear arms and guns and everything like that. So let them have the guns. Let's ban the bullets. Right?
Yeah. You know, that sounds kind of flip, but I believe it was Senator Simon, Paul Simon of Illinois, who famously said that if we can't make guns go away, you don't have a right to bear bullets. Let's go ahead and make bullets really expensive or hard to get, especially the armor-piercing ones, those crazy kind.
Sure. You know, if you can have them for show, but, you know, it doesn't go against the Constitution and it makes it won't make the NRA happy, but it's a way around it.
I'm open to suggestions, Jay. Thanks for the call. This is Steven. You're on WGN. Steve, what do you want to say?
Yeah, I don't think there's any rule book for presidents to follow, which one's better than the other. They have to follow what they personally feel. Otherwise, it comes across insincerely.
Yeah.
But the other issue was the high school, they sent out an email to all of the teachers a year ago about this guy, that he could not come onto the campus with a backpack.
He blasted his way in, though. But he blasted his way in.
Right, but there's 32. But they never told a police authority about this. Not one.
I see.
I think students should be trained at school that if you hear something, you must say something because of these kinds of things happening. Same thing with teachers. They got to stop being the students' buddies and be the authority figure they should be in these schools.
That's Stephen. Thanks for the phone call. It's 128. Our texters include, this is about mental health. There are more guns than people. John, there's no wrong time to talk about gun control. Now is the time. This texter says, I'm sick of Trump's psychopathic sounding voice when he says innocent children in his speech. It is meaningless from him given his gun control stance. John, I feel terrible saying this. I think Donald Trump would not have been able to speak without a script. I do believe there's something terribly wrong with him, and I'm sad to say that. Well, that's not my point when I bring this up, but they obviously were two different kinds of delivery. I'm more interested in the timing. And we will not figure that out today. It's 1:29. We do have the news. That's right around the corner. I'm going to give you some Elton John tickets to his concert when he comes to town before 3 o'clock. And in a couple of minutes, we'll visit with Kelly Pope. She's a forensic accountant. The stories she tells are amazing in her podcast, Nothing But the Truth. In fact, she'll tell one of those stories on WGN. A little bit of ground to cover here, and it's all fascinating. We'll start with Kelly Pope. She's in our studio. She's an associate professor of accounting at DePaul University.
Oh, good job. People love accounting talk.
Hey.
That'll be really interesting.
Hey!
Oh, boy, this is a real barn burner. Kelly, welcome back. How are you? I don't invite you back, but that I don't love you and the work that you do. You and I first discovered each other. That is, I found out about how you told the story of
Rita Cronwell and the City of Dixon with the documentary All the Queen's Horses.
Which was just not only a great movie, but you really told it. I mean, the work that you did on this and the people you got to tell the story of how this woman in Dixon, Illinois, ripped that town off for years to right. the tune of how much money?
$53.7 million, and that's a conservative number.
$53 million. That little town's roads weren't patched enough. The cops weren't given the raises they deserved because $53 million went into her pocket, her show horses, her fancy lifestyle.
Absolutely.
You told that story in the documentary. You are doing podcasts now called Nothing But the Truth, and the podcasts focus on what?
It focuses on crime and fraud stories and corruption and finding the truth of those.
When I heard that you were doing that, I thought, no, you can't do that because there's only going to be one Rita Cromwell story. There's only going to be one, wow, if I could just drill down, I'd have that and we could make it a movie or a podcast. But you're cranking these out left and right.
Absolutely. Teamed up with a great group of people, Abby and Tim, and so we find these amazing stories and find the truthness of those stories.
Abby Ellen is a journalist. You may have read her New York Times column, which was called, I want to say, Preludes? Preludes. Welcome, Abby. So you wrote for the New York Times for years. How did the two of you get together?
We met very randomly, but I am writing a book about deception, and it's called Duped. And Kelly and I were introduced because of her interest in fraud and my interest in deception, and they kind of are married together. So that's how we met.
You've got a book coming out by that title.
I do have a book, Duped, yes.
So it's your story or a bunch of stories of people who were duped?
It is both. I was engaged to a man who turned out to be a pathological liar and went to prison. And I left him before that came out, so I win, sort of. But and then I interviewed many other people and have spoken to many other people who've been deceived, and also people who are deceivers.
Is it people who are duped by Nigerians who are doing internet fraud, or people who are involved in affairs of the heart, and their heart is what leads them astray?
It is people who have been deceived by people close to them, whether it is in fact their partner or their brother or their neighbor or their friendly radio host, we don't know.
And is it deception in terms of monetary?
But everything. I look at everything. I look at monetary. I look at love. I look at you name it.
What's the common thread? Is it a certain personality type that allows them to be deceived?
There are two common threads. One is that they're really, really, really good. Some people are really good at lying.
The deceivers.
The deceivers. And the other thing is that we all deceive ourselves. And we believe what we want to believe and we see what we want to see. Hmm. And especially when love is involved and the heart is involved, you don't want to know that the person next to you is not quite who he or she seems to be.
Would you say that the town of Dixon was duped? Were they a little complicit in wanting to believe?
I would say yes. They wanted Rita to be this this queen. And she had a lot of respect and actually still has a lot of respect. A lot of people think highly of her, even post $53 million theft. So I think they wanted to see what they wanted to see.
Doug Williams is in our studio. He served 2 years in prison for coaching people on how to pass polygraphs. He's a former Oklahoma City police officer. Doug, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you.
So how did you all line up? Kelly, how is it that he is part of our little circle?
Abby told me about his story, and he came, flew in from Oklahoma City to join a group of DePaul students this afternoon to share his story. And I called Abby, and Abby came from L.A. to share the story, and I called Tim to come down and do this recording for our podcast, and Tim's also from the All the Queen's Horses team as well. And so that's how we all got together.
Tim's your sound guy. He's sitting over there. Hi, Tim. So, Doug, tell me your story. What were you doing?
Well, I refer to myself as the only licensed polygraph examiner who's ever told the truth about the lie detector. And it's been almost 40 years ago now that I launched a crusade against what I describe as the insidious Orwellian industry. I have proved many, many times that the polygraph is no more accurate than the toss of a coin in determining deception. I have proved it in many other forms. I was in 1986. I was on CBS 60 Minutes, and we did a sting on the polygraph where we showed that 3 out of 3 different polygraph examiners called three different innocent, truthful people liars on a crime that never even happened.
So that was your belief, and yet you were administering polygraph tests as a police officer?
I administered polygraph examinations from 1972 to 1979.
What did you do with the results? As you were taking these tests and deciphering the results, what did you do with them? Did you pass?
I never used the results by the test itself. I did, however, very effectively use the polygraph as a prop for an interrogation. I was a great interrogator, and
So it says here you're lying or you're telling the truth and would manipulate the person you're asking questions
to. Well, to a degree, but I would. Most of the confessions that I got and I received before we even gave the test. I would make the polygraph into the bad cop, and I would be the good cop, and I would tell them, you know, let's get this straight before. I don't want this. You don't want to have this polygraph called you a liar.
Well, this is all interesting, but I don't see how this gets you into jail. What got you put in jail for a couple of years?
I'm still trying to figure that out myself. The man behind the whole investigation of me, it was called Operation Lie Busters. There's quite a bit of information on the internet about it. The man was an investigator with the federal agency, and he came out and said in the public forum with the American Polygraph Association people, said that he's going after Doug Williams because Doug has protested the loudest and the longest against the polygraph.
Were you coaching people how to beat the test?
Oh, yes. I'd done that for
Is that against the law?
There is no statute that prohibits me
from
teaching.
Why did this guy go to jail then?
That's the $53 million question.
Or the $4 billion question, since that polygraph industry is $4 billion industry.
So do you two think that polygraphs like he are not reliable?
I have a chapter. That's how I got to Doug in the first place. I talk about this in my book, and I have a whole chapter on polygraphs and interrogation skills, and there are other ways that you can determine if somebody is lying. And you know what the option? What I have concluded and what people have told me, it's gut. You trust your gut. You get that little feeling in your stomach that something's off. That's the best. Short of doing what Kelly does, which is, you know, the putting the numbers
looking
together
at the books.
And the trail. Exactly. Short of doing that, you have to go by your gut.
What do you say about this?
Well, given that I was once accused of lying, and I thought, I'm going to get a polygraph test. And I thought, yeah, I passed a polygraph test. I felt like I had accomplished something until I met Doug. So now I don't know.
That worries me, to be honest with y'all, because I think, like you, suppose I was accused of lying. I think I would be nervous enough about telling the truth that I'd set the bells and whistles off.
Absolutely.
And
that's right.
I'd be my own worst enemy. Is that what you're trying to tell us, Doug?
Exactly. The polygraph is based on a faulty scientific premise. The polygraph industry says that the polygraph is accurate 95% to 98% of the time as a lie detector. The problem with that is that the reaction that they would brand as a liar, increased blood pressure, erratic breathing pattern, increase in GSR, sweat activity on the hand, all of those reactions can be caused by any number of innocent stimuli.
Are they admissible in court? Does it depend on the state? How does that work, Polly?
So the only state in the union that actually requires polygraph examinations admits them as evidence in a court is New Mexico. And it's an interesting side note. I was just contacted about a month ago from a assistant district attorney in New Mexico who is wanting me to testify about how the polygraph should not be admitted into evidence because it's not accurate or reliable. I explained to him that I am a convicted felon now, and I didn't know if he would want to bring me into court. And he says, I'm very well aware of that, but he said, you are also the premier expert on this, and the mere fact that they threw you in prison for teaching people how to beat the test is prima facie evidence the polygraph is worthless as a lie detector.
So would you say that I could hook you up to a machine and you could get the needle to go whichever way you wanted?
I can write my name on that polygraph chart.
And make it lie?
I can make...
Or make it tell. Okay.
Absolutely.
And could you teach me to do that?
In 5 minutes or less.
Like, say, I did not kick my dog today. You asked me, did I kick my dog today? And I'm going to say I did not. But you could... It would probably be easier to coach me to make it look like I'm telling the truth, right? So tell, like I did kick my dog today, and say, John, did you kick your dog today? You could coach me so that I'll say, no, I didn't, and it will affirm my lie. You could coach me how to do that, right?
Absolutely.
Is it like this? Even breathing, focus. Is it stuff like that?
Simple. Very simple maneuvers. Very simple maneuvers. And it's a really interesting parlor game the polygraph is, but when you stop and think about how many hundreds of thousands of people have had their lives ruined by these charlatans who purport to be able to detect deception with this instrument. Now, are you aware that in almost every government agency, they require polygraph examinations as a condition of employment and continued employment with periodic tests?
Okay, but maybe I'm not so upset by that. We're visiting with Doug Williams. 2 years he served in prison sentence for coaching people how to pass a polygraph test. I guess you're not supposed to do that. He's a former Oklahoma City police officer. He is the subject of a podcast that you've heard us talk about here on WGN Radio. It's called Nothing But the Truth. And the hosts of that are Kelly Pope from DePaul. She's been in our studio before. And Abby Ellen, the journalist and former New York Times columnist. She's also an author. But so say it's only 70% accurate. I guess my point is this. Do we all agree that isn't it possible that it would be a good tool to have? Okay, it's not perfect, but let's see how you do anyway. Nothing's perfect. I mean, what do you make of that logic?
You know, what they say about polygraphs is that they're only as good as the interrogator. So if you get a really good interrogator, then they can swing things one way or the other. I think, you know, if you want to get somebody who takes a polygraph and then you say, okay, this is one of many tools we use and, you know, maybe we can discount it later. I'm not opposed to that. But if that's the only tool, I think that's really problematic.
I think I had a really good interrogator when I did my polygraph. He made me feel very comfortable. It took a long time, though. It was like a three-hour process.
What is the definition of a good interrogator? The one who can get what he wants or the one that gets the truth?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on what the definition of is, right? I mean,
what do you need here? Here's a scene, though, that I imagine. The person whose truth everybody in America wants today is Donald Trump's, and they want to know if maybe the Trump administration, the campaign, conspired with the Russians. And if he's going to sit down with Robert Mueller, I think a lot of us think it would be interesting if he was hooked up to the machine, just for fun, just for kicks.
But you have two things going on there. A, he could learn how to you know, skew the results.
But he could not, but go ahead.
But B, if you believe your lies, you will pass a polygraph.
Then he could.
If you believe, exactly. If you did not...
Isn't that frightening?
It is frightening. And so if you are a certified psychopath who has no feeling of guilt and no conscience or whatever, you will just waltz out and, you know, you didn't think you did anything wrong. So you'll pass.
So what's the podcast that you all are going to do with Doug here then? What are you going to... What direction are you going to take that conversation?
I think we're starting with the history of what polygraphs do, and then his fascinating story. I mean, Doug has served in the military, the White House Situation Room, and just has this beautiful background and is the least likely person that you would ever think would end up going to jail for.
I thought you were going to say he has this beautiful hair.
He has beautiful hair.
He's like a Wella Balsam commercial.
He is a silver fox, for what it's worth.
He is a silver fox. Silver blonde fox.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Folks, I'm out of time. I don't mean to make light of that because this is fascinating and serious, and everything I just said about your hair is true, but the rest of this is more important. So, Kelly, this is then. When does this episode go up?
Tim, when does this episode go up?
Hey, sound guy. Couple weeks.
He says a couple weeks. We put it on the radio.
But there are already episodes that I can find now.
There are. There's five and hopefully six soon.
Nothing But the Truth is the podcast.
That's right.
It's free wherever you find podcasts. Look for Nothing But the Truth with Chicago's own Kelly Pope, Abby Ellen from the New York Times, whose new book is going to be called Duped. It is. When the book comes out, let's have you on again
as
well.
That would be lovely.
You can come along as well.
All right.
But Kelly, I want you to come on every week or so, every month or so, as often as new episodes come out, and let's continue to follow Nothing But the Truth.
Sounds great. Thanks,
ladies, gentlemen. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Good luck to you all. We'll pause for the news in a few minutes. At 2 o'clock, Steve Bertrand will do that. In the 2 o'clock hour, we'll visit with one of the editors at the Florida Sun Sentinel and catch up on the latest on the shooting there. And then we'll also talk with Shelley Colwin, an attorney in town who has some amazing stories to tell. Oh, and by the way, give me 30 seconds. I'll read this commercial, and then we'll visit with an Olympic athlete who's also in the studio. How about that? Illinois Bone and Joint Institute has more advanced fellowship-trained physicians than any other orthopedic practice in the Midwest, with the most comprehensive medical, diagnostic, and rehabilitative services. IBJI has more than 100 orthopedic specialists, rheumatologists, podiatrists, pain management physicians, and more. Plus, their ortho access immediate care facilities welcome walk-ins. So they'll treat your aches, your breaks, your twists, your sprains. Just walk in. Visit IBJI.com to find the facility or specialist nearest you. And the Olympic athlete I'm referring to, of course, is Violetta Padromedic, who demonstrated her Olympic skills on Channel 9 early this morning.
I tried.
Dun, 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 dun,
it was
dun,
very an honorable act for our country.
Channel 9 is doing a series of Olympic challenges, their staff versus radio stations in town. Yesterday, Violetta sent me a note and said, hey, do you want to join me on Channel 9 tomorrow morning real early? And then I watched the kind of shenanigans they were all up to, and
you're glad you didn't do
and
it?
I passed.
or you regretted not doing it.
Well, so what did you do today?
So today what we had to do is I put shaving cream on Justin Kaufman, who stepped in your absence, and all over his face and his beard, which was kind of difficult. And then I had to throw little cheese balls at his face and try to make them stick. Whoever had the most cheese balls at the end of the 30 or 40 seconds, I don't know. Time went slow at that point, and I was just trying to get as
did
many.
You hit him in the face with the cheese ball?
Yeah, but he was doing this bobbing and weaving technique that I had never seen before, and we had not practiced.
Yeah.
I think he choked up, and he caused us to get bronze.
I'm all for TV exposure and having a good time, but when you told me what the event was after the fact later today, I'm so glad I found myself too busy to get up this morning.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like your cup of tea, but it was fun.
I'm sure it was.
And it made for good TV, I think.
We'll see what Justin says about that this evening. Actually, Justin's not on tonight, is he? We got Blackhawks hockey.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Yes, I am.
Here's John Williams.
Dow's over 25. That's a percent we'll take. It was at 26 once upon a time, but
Lord have mercy.
And it was on its way to 24, so that's not all bad news.
When I misidentified Ms. Padromedic there, I was actually looking at
stocks for gun manufacturers. Because we talked about this too in the Mincing Rascals, how gun stocks tend to go up after a day like today.
Oh yeah. So what did you were you able to ascertain
it
anything?
Looks mixed. The parent company of Smith & Wesson was up. Sturm, Ruger & Company was up, but ABC saying sales overall for gun manufacturers are down today. Are down since the president took office.
Since the president took office.
Right.
Since this president took office.
Right.
Well, I guess that makes sense because gun owners didn't feel like their
guns are being taken away.
Right. It's when somebody like Barack Obama is in office that gun stocks went up. And I guess I understand the perception there and why that affected the market that way. Maybe for some of those reasons, though, Steve, that is the shooting. A colleague of ours was online yesterday, and he and I were just kind of looking at his computer, and he was, if you will, pretending to attempt to purchase guns or weapons, magazines, those circular magazines where all the bullets would go and a machine gun, bam, 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 and all of that stuff. And it was just amazing. We weren't buying guns. We were just trying to buy bullets and accessories and bump stocks. But it was amazing how they were sold. It was amazing how they were advertised. It was amazing how easy it was to do online. You know what was also amazing? How inexpensive some of that stuff was. I mean, these bullets and guns are final. You know, I mean, these are deadly. And yet the prices were very accessible, under $100 at some of the things that we were looking at. And he was also pointing out to me how many gun shows they have in Florida. I'm not equating the two. That was just us clicking through. But yeah, we were noticing that. He said, oh, God, there's one every weekend. Look at this. Click, 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 click. Great big gun shows. I don't know that that has anything to do with this. It was just our random observation. In fact, Doug Phillips is on the phone line right now. He is the assistant city editor at the Florida Sun-Sentinel. This is the newspaper for which what happened at Parkland would be local news. Doug, thanks for joining us on WGN in Chicago. How are you today?
Good afternoon. Yes, it is local news, local tragic news for us.
By the way, just my observation or my colleagues about the ease with which you can purchase guns down in Florida. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. You were mentioning the gun shows, and that's not an exaggeration. Gun shows every weekend. You can the billboards up and down the highway talk about gun show this weekend, gun show next weekend. And one of the things that's interesting about these gun shows is they don't have the strict licensing and strict requirements that it has when you go into a gun store. So as easy as it is to go into a retail outlet and buy a gun, it's even easier to do it at these gun shows.
Doug, my understanding is, though, that this young man purchased the gun legally. Is that how you all are reporting it there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, and there's no reason to believe that he didn't. The attorney that represents him said that he legally acquired that gun. He was over the age of 18, and you go into the retailer, you give them all the information you have, and probably in less than an hour, you're walking out with the weapon. In this case, has been described as an AR-15-like weapon. The Associated Press has reported that it was exactly what's called a Smith & Wesson M&P-15, which basically is Smith & Wesson's version of the AR-15.
Again, Doug Phillips is on the line, the assistant city editor at the Florida Sun-Sentinel. I understand that you are doing the interviews for the newspaper. All of your reporters are obviously locked in on this local story. So we've kind of asked you to be the conduit for what all you all are hearing. Are your reporters talking or finding out much information about his mental health and who knew what when about his background?
Yeah, we're digging down into what is known, and at this point, it's not a great deal that's known. However, when you put the puzzle pieces together about this young man, number one, he was basically adopted at birth, but his father died when he was four, and his adoptive mother died back in the fall, around November or so, and he was living with friends at the time. And he was described by people who knew him as just being a little off. And some of them were not surprised when something like this happened. But were there enough red flags where he could actually have been detained or something? That is what the big question is right now.
My guess is not. I don't know a state in the union that has gone to that point where we will physically detain you because we worry that someday you'll get a gun and shoot up a school. I mean, sure, some people are so aberrant that they're detained against their will, but that's very much the exception. And I can't imagine Florida's anywhere near something like that.
No, probably not. During a briefing a little earlier today, the sheriff of Broward County, Scott Israel, did sort of make an impassioned plea for some sort of enhanced ability for law enforcement to, even though one has a legally acquired weapon, as in this case, that if law enforcement was notified that somebody was acting kind of strange, maybe not over the legal line, that they would at least be able to do something about it, where now they're sort of constrained by statute on what you can do depending upon, you know, the severity of somebody's emotional state.
Well, what's the political appetite in Florida for having more restrictive gun laws?
Ha! Look, right now in the legislature, there's proposals going around that if you have a concealed weapon permit, should you be able to carry that in church, in a church with a school? I mean, this is legislation that's been poking around before yesterday.
Going in the opposite direction, in other words.
There doesn't seem to be an appetite for it. Whether this will spark it. We've been down this road not only here but in this country before. I mean, children, babies were killed in Connecticut how many years ago? 5 years ago or so. And what's been done? Nothing.
You had a crazy shooting at a nightclub in Florida too, and so I guess it's not something that we haven't visited before. But I've been wondering if there might not be some sort of critical mass. At some point, the country will tip. You're not hearing back from, say, commenters online at the Florida Sun Sentinel, hey, this has got to change or not.
It goes both ways. Certainly there are those who believe that the gun laws are nowhere near as strong as they should be, and the other side of that comment is, hey, you know, this was a person who clearly had mental problems, had nothing to do with what he was carrying. I guess the question, the bottom line of the question is, should he have been able to carry that in the first place?
Well,
what do you do with an AR-15, essentially?
Can you tell me a little bit about, so he buys the gun legally, do we know where and how long he had it, and did the family he was staying with know that he had the gun? Can you talk about that?
Apparently it was bought locally here in the county of Broward County, not really far from where this all happened. And from what we have been able to piece together, family members knew that he had it, but believed that it was, you know, more or less locked up and secured and not used regularly. Some of this is anecdotal and some of this is, you know, what is floating out there. But the fact that he had it in the first place, I think, is what people are worried about.
Were most of the victims freshmen?
Unsure. We know there were 17. We know there were at least one football coach among them.
Yeah.
I've seen various levels of school. I have not seen that they were all freshmen at all. And we, as an aside, we were expecting this afternoon to get confirmation on the identification of all 17.
Yeah, I only ask that because it's interesting. When the story was happening, we were listening to it live on the radio here in Chicago. We were tapping into Florida radio, and we were hearing reports from parents and students who were talking to their kids inside, and they were saying, well, they thought it was confined to the building or the area on campus where the freshmen tended to be. That's the only reason I asked that. Do you know how he was able to gain access to the school? The doors are locked during the day.
Well, what the current theory is that he was on campus and took an Uber to campus, and between that time and the time the fire alarm was pulled, I think we're supposed to learn this afternoon, according to the sheriff, a timeline. So presumably that would have, you know, if he arrived on campus, you know, was he the one that pulled the fire alarm in order to get everybody out of the classrooms?
Right, but he would have had to got in there. I thought I heard that maybe he actually shot his way and maybe fired at the door or something like that.
Well, the campus itself, I mean, you can walk onto the campus. From there, some visitors are supposed to go into the administration's office. So we're not exactly sure what might have happened from there.
How he got in.
We do know he tried to blend with students on the way out, and that's when he was spotted.
What can you tell me about the officer? We heard a soundbite here on WGN Radio from the officer who apprehended him. Can you tell us much about the apprehension?
Well, what he said was that as the students were being evacuated, he noticed somebody who completely fit the description of the person they were looking for, and that he was able to, in his words, sort of detain him without incident.
That's amazing to me. You would think that that kid would go down firing. I mean, you know, none of this makes sense, but it seems like that's how those things end, and that the officers would have sufficient restraint not to beat the living crap out of that kid or shoot him dead because of what he's done. It's remarkable to me that they were able to come up to him and say, hey, you, stop, and they were able to arrest him.
And there was no back and forth shooting. Yeah, the officer, in fact, he said he looked like a typical high school student. So unsure, again, how he got onto the campus. But if he looked like a typical high school student, he could have been just taken for somebody that was, well, he's on campus.
I guess that's why all the kids were told to raise their hands as they were leaving the campus. We don't know who the shooter is.
Right. That's a typical evacuation method to make sure you're not carrying or, you know, that the gunman's not among them carrying his weapon.
Yeah.
And certainly, however, this guy looked like a typical student and still fit the description, clearly wouldn't have had his hands up in the air, it seems.
Lastly, Doug, have you heard much about the motive? Do we know why he may have done this?
There's been a couple of things floating around. There was a white supremacist organization based in Tallahassee, which is our capital, who the head of that organization said that this young man was sort of affiliated with him, although he was acting of his own accord. And that fellow suggested that there was a romantic problem somewhere in the past and that Valentine's Day was something of a trigger. But that's what he's saying. It's not been confirmed.
Yeah.
A police report hasn't said that yet, so we just don't know.
Doug Phillips is the assistant city editor at the Florida Sun Sentinel. Well, our best to all of you down there. I can't imagine how people are trying to get through it, and I know it's a challenging day for your staff. Do what you guys do, and Doug will visit again. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Wait a minute. So we're giving away tickets to a concert a year from today? I looked at this. I said, hey, there's a typo on this thing, Elif. It says February 15th and 16th. She says, yeah, 2019. 2019? Well, I don't know what I'm going to be doing a year from now. I guess if I won tickets to Elton John, that's what I would be doing a year from now. That's why I think sometimes I don't have great plans, because I always think, well, something better's going to come up. Honey, nothing better's coming up. Go to the damn Elton John concert. So tickets to the Elton John show, concert at Allstate Arena, go on sale Friday, February 16th at eltonjohn.com. eltonjohn.com, you can buy tickets starting tomorrow, Friday. But I have a pair of tickets to give away right now. Oh, that's good. When's the concert, John? A year from now. Okay, so you need to, and I kind of feel like Bill and Wendy when they were giving away tickets to the Saturday Night Live experience at the Museum of Broadcast Communications here in Chicago. Let's give it to somebody who really knows, in their case, Saturday Night Live. In this case, Elton John. Steve, are you any good at Elton John trivia?
I'm not terrible.
Okay, well then don't answer it out loud. This song's lyrics are a satire on the music industry in the 1970s. The song is about the greed and glitz of the early 1970s music scene. It's portrayed in Bernie Taupin's words to the song that include, "We'll kill the fatted calf tonight, so stick around. You're going to hear electric music, solid walls of sound." Those are lines from what song that is about the greed and glitz of the 70s?
I can name that one in just a few words. You ready?
Well, if you say it on the radio, Steve, then it'll kind of kill the contest.
Not if I win the tickets.
I promise you, if you win, you are not eligible.
Okay.
So the question is, what was Bernie Taupin talking about, or in what song did he say that the song is about the greed and glitz of the early 1970s music scene? It was portrayed in his words, "We kill the fatted calf tonight, so stick around. You're going to hear electric music, solid walls of sound. He was making fun of the 70s music scene. What was the song? Where do we go, Aleph? To Adam. Adam, you're on WGN Radio. What's the correct answer?
Benny and the Jets.
You a big Elton John fan?
Yes, I am, and I can't believe it because I actually saw him. I saw a tribute to Elton John open for a Beatles tribute, never thinking that I would actually see himself. I am, like, crazy about it. I'm a super fan, and I'm super excited.
Now instead of saying, yeah, I saw Elton John with the Beatles / tribute bands.
Yeah.
Hey, Adam, nice going. So, yeah, 1 year from today, you know where you're going to be, don't you?
I know exactly where I will be. That is the super cool, and you are wonderful. I listen to your show a ton. I'm very excited.
Congratulations. Talk to Aleph some more, and we'll get you those tickets. And then you owe us a call in a year and a day to give us your review, okay?
You know I will. I will call you right away. I'll call you from the show.
I kind of think you will. Adam, congratulations. I'm glad you won. WGN, this is John Williams. So congratulations to the winner of those, I believe his name is Adam, the winner of those Elton John tickets. Are we going to give away any more Elton John tickets? Let's give away some more Elton John tickets. I don't have them. Don't worry, I won't. 14 people on the 7th floor just fell out of their seats. But is anybody else, Aleph, giving away Elton John tickets? I think Ro is, isn't he?
He's giving away Ed Sheeran tickets.
Yeah.
Or he might have already given them away.
Yeah, we had Steve, if you could go to one show, Ed Sheeran or Elton John, we had our choice. They said, do you want to give away tickets to Elton John or Ed Sheeran? I said, well, both are great options. But which concert would I rather go to? Elton John. I think I'd like to go to an Ed Sheeran show, too. I sure would.
As soon as you said that, as soon as you started talking about that, the phone started lighting up again.
Oh, yeah. People are like, oh, you got more tickets. Oh, my God.
I, at this point, would choose Ed Sheeran.
Okay, fine.
What?
Well, because I think the correct answer is, of course, Elton John, because he's not going to tour anymore.
Oh.
To which you then say,
I've seen him a couple times.
Oh, I didn't know that.
A few times. Oh,
yeah. I thought you didn't believe in the farewell tour, that this is going to be a protracted farewell.
That you're going to have the chance? No. No, I mean, I love Elton John music.
Yeah.
But I think I've seen him. I think Ed Sheeran is in his prime right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Hey, can I give you one other note?
Hmm?
You sure?
Well, it depends on what it is. But
Amazon has announced that Jeffrey Tambor is out of Transparent.
That's the end of that show. Why?
Because he was accused of sexual harassment about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, harassment on the set. And they've announced that there's a 5th season coming up. It's not clear exactly what will happen, but it looks like Tambor is officially out.
Boy, I love him, too. He is so good in the things that he's in. You know, we've all got to now sort of do this little thing where you then take your feeling for the show and the characters they create and their talent. You had to do this with Mel Gibson once upon a time, for instance, and then decide what you're going to do with that, because you discover there are people that disappoint you, that are criminal, that are whatever they are, and then doggone it, those shows are funny or those movies are great. So now what do I do? Don't watch them anymore? Don't enjoy them anymore? How do I do that? Huh? It's 2:40 on WGN. There's a story in the Chicago Tribune the other day that I get to just now because we have been so busy with so many things. But here is what Ray Long, Rick Pearson, and Bill Luckett wrote in the Chicago Tribune. House Speaker Michael Madigan faced a barrage of criticism Tuesday over his handling of a sexual harassment complaint against a top political aide. It was made by a former campaign worker, Elena Hampton, against Kevin Quinn, a longtime loyal Madigan operative. So here's what happens. This young man, Quinn, is this woman's direct supervisor. And in a series of texts, which have been printed at least online, he is asking her out. He says, hey, I think you're hot, just so you know. And it's a series of texts that go on over a number of months at which he continues to pester her for a date. How about we grab a beer? Do you like me? Would you go out with me? She maintains that they should maintain a sort of professional distance. She's putting him off. Remember, he is her supervisor, by simply saying, I don't think I should mix my personal life with my professional one. And then he says, okay, I got it. I respect that. But then son of a gun, a few weeks later, there he is again saying, hey, 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 hey. And somebody else tweeted this week that reading this exchange is absolutely exhausting. It reminds us of how difficult it is for some women to maintain a job or their sanity, because not only do they got to do what they do, but they've got to sort of navigate around male supervisors who are hitting on them. And I don't know how this guy didn't get the memo that that sort of thing is not only wrong, but it will cost you your job these days, but evidently he didn't get it. And it may be that his last name was Quinn, that he was politically connected, and that he'd never thought it would come around to that. That young woman's attorney is Shelley Colwin, and he joins us now on WGN. Shelley, this is John Williams. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, John.
That's my setup of it. What else would you add to what I've just said so far?
Oh, I think you've been, you know, I think you're pretty on target. I mean, as I said when I was asked the other day by the media, I think the problem is that it's women shouldn't have to put up with this. They shouldn't be put in this situation. And most importantly, they shouldn't have to be made to be afraid to report it for fear of losing their job.
Well, there was a conflict in the reporting on this.
Sure.
Not necessarily in the reporting, but what the reporters were told. That is, as I understand it, the Quinns or Madigans have said that she asked them to be discreet about it, to not get this young man fired. What were her instructions to either Alderman Quinn or Mike Madigan when she told them about this?
Well, that's just not what she said, and the bottom line of it is that she went to them in the hopes that she could continue her career and not have to work with this fellow. And that was not an option. And so she ultimately left because he was not going to be disciplined, i.e. fired. Okay.
But he did stop sending those sorts of texts, right? He did stop soliciting a date with her?
He did. That's true.
Okay, then I'm not taking sides on this one, but then how is that not a resolution to the problem?
Well, I guess the way I would put it to you is if I was a woman working someplace and a fellow had been pestering me for months with inappropriate texts and things like "you're hot" and everything like that, and I have to go to work with him every day, and every time we have an exchange, every time we sit down at a desk, I got to deal with that. I shouldn't have to deal with that.
Even if it has stopped. And so the resolution could be he gets fired or he gets reassigned rather than she gets reassigned.
Absolutely, because what the employer is supposed to do is send a loud and clear message that supervisors, coworkers, this is inappropriate. It's wrong. It shouldn't be an either-or situation.
It sounds
either I deal with this or I have to put up with it or leave my job. That's not an option. It shouldn't be.
This is not the first time all of us have been asking the question, well, I wonder what they knew and when they knew it. That is it fair to criticize Alderman Quinn or Speaker Madigan because they didn't know about it in time, but once they did, they took corrective action? What's your thought about that?
I don't think they took corrective action other than to tell them to stop sending the text. That, to me, is not sufficient corrective action. And when Mr. Madigan heard about it in November, he relays it to his lawyer. He's a very busy person. That's fine. But the lawyer then, you know, tells her what she told him, which was, you know, if you're looking for $25,000 in a front page story on the Tribune, I'll turn the text over to myself. That's what Ms. Hampton was told.
I'm sorry, $25,000, what are you talking about?
When Ms. Hampton met with Mr. Madigan's lawyer, as Ms. Madigan said to the media the other day, the response was, what she reported what was said was, if you're looking for $25,000 in a front page story on the Tribune, I'll take the text over and give them to the Tribune myself. And then when she got past that, it was, okay, so you want to work, and then Ms. Hampton said, I want to work on this.
Pardon me. So in other words, just to belabor the obvious, they were saying, you're trying to blackmail us, and right. if that's the game you want to play, we'll out the whole story ourselves.
Right, basically. That was the impression I got.
Was she doing anything like that? Was she asking for...
No, not at all.
Keep going, then.
She wasn't asking for anything like that. This is the problem. The fact that we're, and I'm not blaming you, the fact that we're talking about it in this context is the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is that she's in her late 20s, a married fellow who's 15, 20 years older than her, whatever it is hitting on her. She doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know how to deal with it. It just keeps getting increasingly harsh. Now she's afraid. She goes to her mentor, who's also his boss, I think is his boss, pretty sure, and says, get me out of this mess.
Yeah.
I want you to know what's going on. And we'll tell them to stop sending the text.
So she goes to the Chicago Tribune because she felt she had no other recourse, using the machinations of the Democratic Party or the state of Illinois government wasn't working for her. Mike Madigan didn't do anything about it. Alderman Quinn didn't do anything about it. Did she have any other recourse?
She wrote the Tribune.
Pardon me?
She filed a charge with the EEOC, and then she met with the Tribune as part of that. But, yeah, she didn't have any other recourse. No, there was no other recourse for her. She could file suit. She filed a charge with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and that's where the case is right now.
Does she have civil action against them? Does she plan on suing him in any way?
We're considering that, but as a first step of that, you have to file a charge with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
So that's where that story sits today.
Okay.
Well, we'll continue to follow this. I think we have read or seen or heard worse.
Yeah.
He's not threatening her physically. I don't know that he was physically challenging her in person at work, but it's just unrelenting what he's doing on the phone.
Well, there's the point. Does it really matter? I mean, really, does it matter? Does it matter if a woman in her situation, at your radio station, would it matter if you were going up to one of the staff assistants who was 15, 20 years younger than you and constantly, after she told you several times, back off, please, I just want to do my job. Does it matter that you didn't put your hands on her?
I'm going to change subjects on you real quick for one second. But before I do, how does this relate then to Mike Madigan? He was not her immediate supervisor. What should Mike Madigan do now, or what should happen to Mike Madigan as a result of this?
Well, I can't comment on that. What I can say is that she worked for Friends of Madigan. She worked in his political organization. She went to him to put him on notice. This is the kind of guy you've got working for you. Okay, I wanted you to know that's why I left, not because I was disloyal. I left because of him. My reaction as an employer would have been not to send some lawyer to talk to her. Mm-hmm. My reaction would have been, let's appoint someone to make sure she's right, and if she is right, let's get rid of this guy. He says he did that, but we don't have any evidence of that.
In the Chicago Tribune today, here's a different topic. On page 3 in the ink column, there is the story about President Trump appointing a new judge. And they talk about the judge and her history with Donald Trump. In there, they recall that she was actually the judge who presided over a civil case between Donald Trump, when he's got Trump Tower over here. So there's his tower, and there's one of his tenants, an 87-year-old woman named Jacqueline Goldberg, who accused the then not president of the United States of ripping her off over a deal for a Trump Tower condo. The Tribune says it all got to be too much for the judge, who brusquely scolded Donald Trump and the attorney. You two have been dancing around and boxing each other, she chided. This is not a boxing match. You've got to stop it. Let's control ourselves. Do you think juries like this? If you do, I can tell you they do not. The person that was boxing with the president that day was you. How do you remember that day?
I remember that day as cross-examining a very evasive person who, in my opinion at the time, was not being candid, and aggressively cross-examining him, and him not answering the question, evading the question, talking over the question, and making speeches to the jury, which aggravated the judge. And so, to be even-handed in my view, she told us both to stop. But in my view, the cause of the problem clearly was Mr. Trump. It didn't work out that way. The case didn't go my way, but that's how it was.
Do you have any insight? I could ask you 53 questions or none. I'm not exactly sure what the follow-up is here. Shelley, what did you take away from this guy after having cross-examined him? Not many people can say they did that to Donald Trump, but what can we glean from your experience?
I think that what you're seeing is exactly who he is. What you see every day in the newspapers is exactly who he is. In my view, he was like that then, he's like that now, and he appealed to people on the jury. The same people, some of those people are the same people who voted for him in the election. He is, I don't need to describe him any better than all you have to do is listen to him. That's who he is. There's nothing else there. That's who he is.
Shelley Cullen is the attorney for Elena Hampton's discrimination case. We will continue to follow that, as you described it a minute ago. Shelley, thanks for your time this afternoon.
No problem, John.
I was wondering out loud a little while ago, when's Roe giving away Elton John tickets? Well, you just heard he's giving them away after 3:30. They're going to be here? Roe and Anna are going to be here in studio? Oh, I thought they were going to be over at Harry Carey's. They're heading over there later on.
Huh? Later on.
Yeah, okay. All right. Act 255. By the way, Olive, how are the market's doing? The Dow Jones Industrial Average was, what was it this morning? Was it down a little bit? I think futures opened down. And then it was up a little bit. And then it was up a couple hundred points. LF, where is the Dow now?
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 265.17 points at 25,158.66. The Dow is up 1.07%, John.
Up a percent, over 25, 265 plus today. I'll take that. It's 256. Hey, I am WGN King John on Facebook. WGN King John on Facebook. We just posted a quick video. We live streamed it just for about 90 seconds today, and that video is there. If you go to my Facebook page, WGN King John, I want you to like that video, that post, or share it. Share it, even be better. And you'll automatically register by doing so to go on an excellent adventure with me and the guy in the video, David Hochberg, on Thursday. I promise you what we're going to do is really fun. I can't tell you what it is, but if you just like us or share that video, you'll automatically be registered, and 10 of you get to come along. If you can or don't want to, when we tell you what it is, that's okay. But by all means, check out my Facebook page. Hurry up and register to win something fantastic. Bro, what are you guys doing this afternoon?
Elton John tickets coming up this hour, by the way.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for that.
It's a very important item right there. It's his farewell tour.
Yeah.
We don't know that it's actually the last time you'll ever have an opportunity to see him, but it's certainly going to be maybe the last time you'll ever see him in Chicago. So you got that coming your way. Tom Skilling and Ben Bradley are both going to be here as well. Ben Bradley has sat down with the armed robbery victims of the perpetrator who is now charged with killing Commander Bauer.
Yeah.
So these are people that had an incident with him over a decade ago, and what their court life was like in dealing with this.
Hmm. Are you guys talking to Lester Holt today, or is that what day of the week do you guys do, Lester?
We're going to be out, as you know, John. We are then wheeling our way at 4
right.
o'clock
yeah.
to the worldwide toast to Harry Carey,
yes.
live from Harry Carey's
yes.
33 West Kinsey.
And there might be some costumes involved, too. So, Ro will be... did you announce what you'll be wearing?
I did not
okay.
announce. I'll right. announce
something
it when I'm in
very special.
I have to change during the show here, and then we have to be whisked over there, and I have to be whisked in costume, because it's not one you can move around very
no.
easily in.
What's an appro- is it relative to Harry Carey?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Or what would a Harry Carey costume be other than Harry
well,
Carey? Or a giant can
it.
Of Budweiser?
The theme this year... is Space the Infinite Frontier.
Oh, I see.
So check your social media postings for the
Who do I need
photos.
To follow to get a good picture of this?
Oh, let me just tell you something. It's going to be something to behold. All That's right. all
it's
I'm going to say.
Yeah. Pretty spectacular.
Yeah.